From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for March 12, 2021. The Bucks are spending the weekend in D.C. with the Wizards, and the next home game for the Bucks is Saturday, the 20th, with the Spurs. We have a scientific breakthrough to start the day. Scientists have taught pigs how to play video games with their snouts. I'm sure they're not playing Fortnite or even Miss Pac-Man, but it beats the heck out of being turned into pork chops. We have email and snail mail, and now we have potato postage. This is one of those, why didn't I think of that? Or better yet, who thinks of this stuff? A British man started a company that prints messages like text and emails on potatoes for 10 bucks, and he's become wildly wealthy. The question is there a need for this? An Indiana woman was out hunting with her chocolate lab. She put down her 12-gauge shotgun, and of course, the dog stepped on it and shot her in the foot. The dog's name is Trigger. And finally, the British are positioning mannequins dressed as traffic cops near heavily traveled highways. It seems like a creative way to slow down speeders until people started kidnapping the mannequins and holding them for ransom. It was a fun game of cat and mouse until the cops said, "We don't negotiate with terrorists." The mannequins are still missing. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Mike Helzel, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. A great week overall for markets. The NASDAQ up 3.1% this week, closing at 13,320. The S&P 500 up 2.6% for the week, closing at the bell at 39.43. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 292 points on Friday, up 4.1% the week to close on Friday at 32,777. For the year, the Dow Jones now up 7.5%. The S&P 500 up 5.3% and the NASDAQ up 3.5%. Just maybe a brief look at Treasury yields. It's something we've been paying attention to and certainly something we'll talk about this week as well. But the yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury moved up from 1.55% to end last week. It closed today at 1.64%. So I continue to see a slow melting higher of those Treasury yields. We've seen some pretty significant day-to-day moves, but you know, in total, that Treasury yield just seems to be continuing to melt towards the upper side. I think clearly some obvious reasons why the 10-year has been allowed to move higher. Some obvious reasons why perhaps markets are not as spooked as they may have been in other instances of the Treasury yield moving as high as it has. The one exception maybe being growth stocks, where we saw a bit of a pause in, the returns that we'd been seeing in some of those high octane growth names. The NASDAQ is a great example, comprised of many of those growth names. But broadly speaking, markets have continued to rally even as, that 10-year treasury has moved higher, as interest rates more broadly have moved higher. And so maybe worth, as we start off today, reminding everybody that less than a year ago, it'll be a year ago Tuesday, Landis & Company sent out an email to all of our clients, letting them know that in light of what was going on with the pandemic, we would be transitioning all of our workers to work from home. We would continue to service all of our clients the way that they expect, certainly. But obviously, we had some challenges that we needed to get over in terms of navigating the pandemic. Fast forward to where we are today, we're all obviously still sitting in our homes, producing this podcast, sitting in our homes, able to hold client meetings. And I think, maybe one of the biggest changes for us, the ability to do this all remotely, is something that we're not going to forget just because the pandemic is over at some point in time down the road. And so I think, Art, as we jump off here, a year in, we've learned a lot of lessons, and I think many of those lessons are going to stick with us and help us even as we're no longer faced with the challenges of this pandemic at some point in time in the future.
Yeah, what a year it's been. A year ago was declaration of disaster, you know, almost at the beginning. The stock market took its quickest decline in history, declining 35% from February 19th through March 23rd. And then we had the most rapid ascent in history. Trillions of dollars have now been thrown, you know, at the economy. Fiscal stimulus, which I think is benefiting this resurgence we're seeing in the yield on the 10-year treasury to a certain extent, because of the expectation that it will get us back to some semblance of normalcy down the road. When's the last time we actually saw normal in terms of the relationship between the yield on the 10-year treasury and the inflation rate? So I think we're going to be moving, you know, toward that down the road. Recently, the shocks have been just, again, a return to normal. How shocking is that? But the stimulus continues. We've come a long way. The vaccines, as you've been talking about for months now, have made a tremendous impact. I know Joel will talk about that a little later, you know, in terms of the consumer sentiment and the impact on that. But I think we're in a good place now, a much better place than we were a year ago. And I think we have a lot to look forward to from here.
You know, I think that's such a good point about what we have to look forward to. And Mike, I know you have a lot of conversations with clients trying to distinguish between some of the short-term noise and longer-term, what some of the opportunities are, longer-term, you know, what we really care about. And I think the definition of long-term even has changed a little bit, right? That a year ago, we didn't really know what long-term was for this. We think we finally see an end to this, right? The president came out last night and said, May 1st, every adult will become eligible for the vaccine. You had Governor Evers, the state of Wisconsin, today match what the president said last night, promising that as of May 1st, all eligible adults or all adults would become eligible for the vaccine. Now, I don't think that means May 1st, we all get to go get in line and get that vaccine, but it also, you know, I think puts an end date on what this pandemic looks like, or at least what the severity of this pandemic looks like. And so, you know, when you have that conversation with clients about short-term noise versus those longer-term expectations, what kinds of things are you telling them? What kinds of things are you focusing on?
So what's really fascinating is a lot of the conversations I had, if you go back even 6 months, right? 4 to 6 months, it was all about the now. Like, we were in this horrible pandemic, and people are talking about their portfolios in the now. What does it mean for my account, my portfolio, my life right now, right? Fast forward to everything you just said, the conversations I'm having about the now have stopped and are now like, what do you see in 6 months? What do you see in the next year? And I find it, I mean, 4 months is a pretty short time span to kind of switch that perspective real quick. But as you pointed out, a lot of things have happened. So, you know, we've seen some volatility in the markets, especially like you said, with the NASDAQ. And so as I'm talking to people more about kind of planning out for the 6 months, or like the 6 months to a year ahead, longer term, however they want to describe it, they're seeing the NASDAQ be volatile and they're like, should we get out? You know, is this a time to make a move? Is this a time to do this? Is this a time to do that? And I just try and reassure them, like, there's going to be volatility throughout this first part of the year. But if we're looking long term, as you said, Kyle, come May 1st, when more and more people can get the vaccine, more and more people can re-enter society and just go travel. I mean, God knows I want to travel somewhere, anywhere. I want to go to a ball game, you know, just to go sit in a restaurant comfortably with other people, right? Like, my wife is vaccinated. A coworker of hers is vaccinated. They hugged the other day and she was like, oh my God, this is the first person I've hugged outside of my family in over a year. This feels good. So you just put all that going forward. And you try and have people focus on the long-term effects of, like, I do think stocks are going to, you know, push upwards towards the end of the year because more and more people are going to re-enter society. So you try and tell them just really kind of ignore all of this choppiness and volatility right now, because long-term it is going to pay off for them.
And I think we can stress that, you know, we've got a $1.9 trillion stimulus bill that was signed Thursday. We've got, you know, the benefits of the prior stimulus still being felt in some regards, because a lot of the money that was doled out was never spent. It was put in savings accounts. We saw the personal savings rate skyrocket in the wake of, you know, what was, you know, almost unheard of in the midst of this pandemic. And so, you know, I think as people feel more comfortable, that savings rate can come down a little bit. We go back to spending on the things we want to do, not just the things that we have to do. You know, you go to a restaurant, you go to a basketball game, you go to Summer League in Vegas. Mike, I saw your Summer League shirt on today. I know that that's something that you'd love to be able to do. But again, it's about confidence. It's about getting that vaccine. And, you know, candidly, Art, as you look ahead, I think confidence is one of the reasons why we're optimistic about stock earnings. It's one of the reasons why we're optimistic about the economy. And all of that, I think, spells an environment that's, you know, pretty favorable for stock investors.
Yeah, confidence is a significant word. It's absolutely the right word. And quite frankly, the market has been haunted by a bit of overconfidence. One of the reasons yields have been going up is the concern of inflation and the criticism of the spending bill being, it's too much. But I think to a certain extent, this administration and Congress have been haunted by the fact that perhaps they didn't spend enough. There wasn't enough fiscal support after the Great Recession. And so the economy never really heated up enough to produce enough inflation to have a sustained 2% inflation, which has been a Fed goal now for over a decade. This time around, I'm confident they're going to get there. And I think that's a very good thing, although the past couple of weeks, the market has been trading like it's a bad thing. And so thank God we've got the stimulus. Thank God that will. That money is going to be spent. There's going to be a huge amount. There is a huge amount of pent-up demand that's going to result in spending on, as Mike indicated, travel. Everybody wants to go somewhere. There's going to be a shortage of tickets. I mean, ultimately, restaurants are going to be full again. It's just going to take, you know, Mike, as you indicated, 4 months, bam, another 4 months from now. Can you imagine what's going to be going on in this economy? But the Fed has told us they expect that. They expect prices to go higher, reasonably higher. And so I think the trend is a positive one. And this rotation between growth stocks and value stocks are playing catch up. They can only catch up for so long. And then ultimately it's going to be those good earnings stories that'll propel stocks and growth stocks higher. So it's good to be invested. It's good to be making money. It's good to be cautiously optimistic. And as you indicated, confident.
I think just stressing that, you know, that inflation piece that creeps its way into all of these conversations is maybe not as big of a deal as what so many want to point out. And in particular, when you look at the fact that we've been unable to maintain 2% inflation for the better part, you know, for longer than a decade now, and the Fed had set that 2% target as kind of the baseline, suggesting perhaps for a long time, yeah, we could go a little bit higher for a while. The economic term is symmetrical versus asymmetrical, meaning they would allow inflation to move beyond 2%, sustain it a little for a little while to get the average back to 2%. Because when you've been under 2% for so long, I think, you know, the Fed has clearly indicated they're okay with a little bit of inflation right now. And of course, a little bit of inflation isn't the kind of inflation we saw, you know, going through the 70s and 80s. It's the kind of inflation that we'd be happy to have because it suggests that the economy is moving in the right direction. And it's probably closer to, you know, 2.2-2.3%, which is just a little bit beyond that target, than it is to the high single digits or double digits that I think so many people are fearful of getting back to. And Joel, we had some more data this week on consumer prices, producer prices, signs, I think, as we've seen for a little while, that in areas we're seeing some price spikes, but it isn't sustained and it isn't sustained across categories.
That's right, Kyle. You know, as you say, the economy is moving in the right direction. I like the points that you and I were making about the 2% target that the Fed has had, and that it's you know, a symmetrical target. We were looking at some numbers the other day. The Fed's favorite measure of inflation, just over the last 10 years, has barely flirted with that 2% mark, and it's what I think the last measure was 1.5%. And this week we had numbers, the consumer price index, which is the broadest measure of inflation, that, you know, looked as if inflation is moderating, as if it's not as hot as it was even a month ago. And the core consumer price index on a year-to-year basis was showing that inflation was 1.3%. So compare that to that 2%. And that was going back to the lowest we've had since June. So it's not even back to where it was a year ago, you know, before the pandemic started. And as you alluded to, you know, a lot of the consumer price index overall, you know, budged up a little in February, but half of it was because gas prices went up by 6%. And you look at that 6% for, you know, for gas, and that's quite a jump. But again, if you look at it year to year, gas prices have gone up only 1.5%. So it's not as bad as that short term, you know, look that you get from the monthly report.
Yeah, sometimes I think it's all in what you measure. And we talk about that with, you know, the performance of our portfolios as well. And I know it's a conversation we've had on this, you know, this podcast in the past is, if all you do is look at the year-to-date number, you might be missing a broader part of the trend. And, you know, as you rightfully point out, year over year, gasoline prices haven't moved all that much, even if it looks much more significant this year. Obviously, employment is something that we continue to keep a close eye on. Some more data this week on job openings in particular as kind of a key indicator for what the opportunities look like.
That's right. And again, it's moving in the right direction. We saw more job openings in January, and we saw more hires. We saw fewer separations. That takes in, you know, people quitting their job because they feel confident they can get another job, and also, you know, people losing their job, you know, because of transitions. But there's still a big gap. We've got, I usually put a chart every week into the show notes for the podcast. And this week it's a chart looking at the job openings versus the number of people who are unemployed. And it just flip-flopped a year ago. It just, you know, of course, the number of people who were unemployed, you know, shot up to 22 million all of a sudden, and the job openings weren't there. But now, as we said, the job openings are getting back, you know, to where they were a year ago, not that far off, but the unemployed is still huge. There's still a 6 million person gap between the openings and the number of people who are looking for jobs. And that's not even taking into consideration that the 10 million people looking probably don't qualify for all those 4 million jobs that are open.
Yeah, such a great point. Yeah, such a great point, Joel. And I think, you know, all of this conversation about job openings gets back to consumers. It gets back to the 2/3 or more of our economy that's driven by not just the ability to spend, but desire to spend, as we talked about a little earlier in that confidence thing. And so, you know, I think we pay especially close attention to consumer sentiment, consumer confidence numbers to get an idea of what consumers are talking about as far as what they feel comfortable doing. And we got some more data this week on consumer sentiment.
Yeah, there's a preliminary look that the University of Michigan does at consumer sentiment for the month of March. So it's, you know, an early peek at that. And they found that consumer sentiment is the highest it's been since a year ago. So, you know, getting back to where we were before the pandemic, and sentiment's going up because of the things that we've talked about that you would expect. The promise of more federal payments going into people's, you know, checking accounts, maybe as early as this weekend. That's what I'm seeing, as well as vaccinations and you know what that means, and just the whole psychology of it is fascinating. And actually, I mean, talking about confidence, I think we need to be a little hesitant as to you know, pronouncing people confident yet. One of the things that we look at is the consumer credit card use. And we had numbers on that late last week from the Federal Reserve. And those numbers are still going down. So when people are really confident, they're going to go out and spend, and they're going to use their credit cards to do it. Well, that's been going down every single month since the pandemic started. And back in the last recession, it took 10 years, 10 full years for those numbers to recover from the recession. So even if we're still going to be seeing people spending, and you know, everybody expects that, for them to get back to that level where they want to use their credit cards for that, which is a really good indicator, it's going to take a while.
You know, maybe just to stress that, you know, the consumer piece of this is so important because of what it means, not just for economic growth, but because it drives so much of U.S. corporate earnings as well. And so, you know, maybe a slight difference between this crisis and the financial crisis, but a pretty meaningful similarity in that the financial crisis was a global financial crisis. This is a global pandemic. And so spending isn't, you know, the spending constraints aren't limited to here in the U.S. We're seeing it around the world where, you know, travel isn't happening, eating out at restaurants isn't happening. And so, you know, those credit card numbers, while a lot of the data we look at are U.S. specific, you know, that's a similar trend to what we've seen around the world. It's going to be a similar trend to what's impacting U.S. businesses doing business, not just within the U.S., but outside the U.S. And then I think, you know, Joel, you mentioned, you know, the stimulus checks going out this week, you mentioned, or potentially going out this weekend, you mentioned, or rather we mentioned earlier, some of the interest rate conversation. You know, I think a lot of the move in the 10-year that we saw earlier in the year was an expectation very much about what we thought was going to happen or what we thought was likely to happen. There was very little chance that a stimulus bill didn't get passed. There was very little chance that the vast majority of what the Biden administration wanted to have within the bill wouldn't be in the bill because they had the power to do that for the most part. And so, yeah, they had to make a few deals along the way. But, you know, the market's generally been operating under the assumption that that stimulus bill was as much as of a done deal as possible. And so I think maybe some of the run we've seen in the 10-year can take a pause now that we've seen, you know, the stimulus deal get done. You know, the impact's not going to be felt immediately, especially if this is like what we've seen in the past. And so, you know, maybe Art, one of the things that we've talked about the past couple of weeks is just how big of a deal those rising rates are for bonds and what you do about it. But as somebody who's got to talk to clients every day about the bond piece of their portfolio, how do you kind of navigate that conversation of, well, okay, we know rates have risen pretty drastically, but at the same time, you know, there's a reason why you've got what you have in your portfolio.
Yeah, we sound like broken records talking about this all the time, but it's what we believe. It's what we practice. We knew interest rates were going to go up at some point. We didn't expect them, quite frankly, to go up this quickly earlier this year. I don't think it was anything we could have expected. I expected interest rates to be at about 1.5% as a yield on the 10-year treasury by the end of the year. We've been going over that. And the Fed has sat by and repeated over and over again, yeah, we're not going to raise, you know, short-term rates, or we're going to continue to do quantitative easing, buying bonds at $120 billion a month until we get unemployment where we want it, until we have this 2% inflation rate, and until we know it's going to be locked in. I think the Fed is secretly happy about what's been happening because it avoids, I mentioned this to you before, the taper tantrum that happened in, I think, 2013 when Ben Bernanke indicated he was going to reduce, you know, the quantitative easing, the bond buying. So this, to a certain extent, the markets are doing the Fed's work for them. They don't want interest rates to get so high that it chokes off economic growth, especially the housing market. But they do want them to move higher, as we've been discussing. Back to your point about bonds in the portfolios. Bonds, when they go down, never go down as much as stocks. They provide relative stability. They provide income. We're constantly watching to make sure that the duration of our bond portfolios isn't too high, which means the maturities of the bonds aren't too long so that you lose too much as interest rates go up. So we want to make sure we're appropriately positioned for rising rates as we expect them to happen. And we're always looking at quality. We want to have quality bonds in our portfolios. So we're not going to, as a matter of fact, it's a great time because stocks have gone up significantly over the past 12 months. It's a great time to rebalance, put more in bonds. And we need something in fixed accounts to, you know, liquidate periodically to make distributions to our clients who are spending money out of their portfolio. So I totally love bonds. I love having some stability, especially in a week like this when day to day, you never knew which stock was going to go up and which stock was going to go down. So stocks are there to make money over the long term. Don't look at them. They'll make you dizzy. Bonds are there to just give you something to hang on to when everything else is falling apart.
Yeah, I mean, regarding your comments on rebalancing, I'd much rather rebalance into bonds when interest rates are at 1.6 than when they're at 0.6. And so absolutely the right time to add a little bit more back to bonds if you were getting a little aggressive, getting a little stock heavy in your portfolio. But I think the critical piece that I heard from you is that we had reasonable and well-founded expectations for where interest rates were headed, that over the span of a year or 18 months, we'd get back to maybe 1.25%, 1.5%. And we've overshot that. And the wonderful thing I think about the way that we build portfolios is that we got to recognize that even if our expectations for where rates are headed are well-founded, there are times when we can be wrong, or we can be wrong for a period of time. We still may end up being right about where rates in the year as far as what we expect. Nevertheless, the bond piece of the portfolio is still going to work out all right, whether the 10-year ends the year at 1.5% or 2.25%, because we're not doing things with that piece of the portfolio that count on us being 100% right on direction, on time, on magnitude. And so there's so many levers that you've got to pull that if you build a portfolio that has to be drop dead certain about what's going to happen, you're setting yourself up for a pretty big failure. And so, you know, I think that humility, that being humble in terms of how you construct portfolios is such a big deal. Well, we enjoy doing the program for you, and we will talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.